You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Too much expo. That's what I always, anytime I was cleaning a whiteboard and it was just running, because I used too much expo.
Hello and welcome to Too Much Exposition, the theater podcast about nothing. I'm your host, Gabriella Day. This is our co-host, Reeve Carney Stan, number one, Brendan Henderson. Brendan, hello.
That joke was even funnier the second time.
Wasn't it?
We have decided to re-record this because our first take was way too awkward.
Episode one of the podcast is going really well. Brendan, you are the creator of the Wait in the Wings YouTube channel.
What is that?
Who are you? Give us a brief intro.
Yeah, well, I'm Brendan. I'm with Wait in the Wings. As she said, this is our companion sister podcast to our main series, which is Wait in the Wings. You can find us on YouTube at Wait in the Wings or on this podcast network as well. And what we do is we talk about theater history, we talk about the production history of shows, and it's basically just this really nerdy mini documentary that if you love theater history, even if you don't love theater history, and you just want to see some chaos, then I highly recommend listening to it. But if you're just finding this podcast first, then this might be a little bit confusing, and I invite you to go and listen to the newest episode of season 3, which is now streaming. We had to restart because last time I said season 2 because I was so anxious.
You said that this is the sister podcast to the Wait in the Wings podcast, which made me think about our lives as an if-then situation. So if we have two podcasts and there's the Wait in the Wings podcast and the Too Much Exposition podcast,
right,
like which one is the Liz, which one is the Beth?
The Wait in the Wings main series would be the Beth because it's more like distinguished and like puts
was
on
Beth
a face.
Was Beth the serious one? She was the busy business woman.
Beth was the serious one because they're like, why are you changing your name to such a boring name? And then Liz was like hip and trendy, which is what this podcast is.
This first episode is dedicated to Liz, the video editor of Wait in the Wings.
Yeah.
Brendan, how are you? How are things? What's going on in your life?
I'm good. My phone keeps going off because I've got the Citizens app downloaded. Anytime that I get an update, I'm going to read it to you of what's going on in my neighborhood here in Philadelphia. Right now, we have a report of a woman with a hammer and a knife at a Family Dollar.
Ooh, keep me updated on the.
I'll keep you up to date on what's going on. But no, today's been pretty good. It's a Saturday when we're recording this.
Yes.
Which I'm sorry to break the ruin your immersion, whoever's listening to this. But I woke up at 8 a.m. and I was actually productive today because I knew we were going to do this.
I'm super proud of you, and we're here, and we're doing it.
Yeah.
I was going to make a joke that I'm moving tomorrow, so today is my last day where I currently live here in sunny San Diego, California, and there's a kind of a running bit in our lives that my office is in my closet, and so it's Gabby in the closet. So I was going to make a joke that this is the first and last time I'm recording in a closet, but that's not true, because where I'm moving, I'm going to be recording podcasts also in my new closet. So.
But that new closet has considerably more space.
No, it's a smaller closet. My office will not be in there. I'll have a real proper office in the kitchen instead of in the closet now. So I'm really moving up in the world.
Wow. So much more square footage.
So much more square footage. You got a driver's license? What's happening? How old are you? Aren't you? Didn't you drive across the country to Philadelphia?
I
did. How did you not have a driver's license?
I had to get a new driver's license because I had to transfer it over to Pennsylvania.
And it took you that long?
Absolutely did. I was supposed to get it done within 60 days and I just kept forgetting. So I walked in and I acted like, it's been 1 week. It's been 60 days. I walked in. Yep. It's been a solid 90. Okay, that's a lie.
It's been like seven months.
For legal purposes, it's been like 59 days. I acted like I was like, I'm new to the area. Where's a good place to get food? What's a way?
You sound too much like me, and I'm a little offended by
it. Well, I thought it was going to be like, because you have to realize Utah DMVs are so different from Pennsylvania DMVs. Because the Utah DMV is just like the gloomiest place in the world. You walk in, it takes you probably an hour to get seen, and then you get seen, and like they're just super miserable. Which, I mean, granted, I would hate to work in a DMV.
Yeah, it would be the worst.
But the Pennsylvania one was just like, and it was a new experience where they were greeting me with a smile and they were happy. And like there was a guy, like a cop, not just a guy with a gun, but a cop with a gun. And he just looked like the happiest person ever.
You're such a simp for Philly, like to the degree to which you're like, I like the DMV now.
Well, it
that
was so
I
unnatural because if you're thinking Philly, you're going to think that they're like angry. But it was just the cheeriest DMV ever. They had really cool facts up on the TV.
Oh, God.
The Motor Vehicle Network? Are you kidding?
Oh, no. And the California DMVs, they run this advertisement for glamour plates that it's like someone proposing to his girlfriend, but like with a customized license plate. It's the stupidest thing in the world.
Well, there's a new idea. What does Will You Marry Me? Does that fit on a license plate? Is my first question.
I don't know. Huh. Or they like go on the website and he's playing around with the ideas and it's like, marry me, ha ha ha, he he he. It's so stupid. It's really
what
dumb.
If she says no? Then he has to drive around with those plates and it's just a constant reminder of the disappointment.
Awk. Super awk. So today what we're talking about is a nice retrospective on season 3, episode 1 of Wait in the Wings, where we covered Hadestown. So Wait in the Wings, sort of like Brennan was saying, covers pretty much the history of a show. And as you may or may not know, dear listener, the road to get to Hadestown was a long and winding one. So I have a challenge for you, Brendan. Are you ready?
Oh, God. Yeah, I think so.
You have...
This is the secret surprise.
You have 45 seconds to give us the basic blocks of how Hadestown came to be.
I have to condense a 23-page script into 45 seconds.
Into 45 seconds. That's correct. I'm just saying, if you would like to hear the whole story, please watch the video. But for now,
yeah,
Brendan...
we're
going to
give you a bite-sized one.
You have 45 seconds. Are you ready?
I hope so. I've still got my whiteboard up with all the all the important blocks, but I should be able to do it. Let's go. Okay,
take a deep breath.
I'm set.
Okay, ready. Okay, go.
All right, so it starts, and Aeneas Mitchell is like, hey, I have to get back to Virginia and my really hunky boyfriend. And then she's like, whoa, I just thought of a really cool line. Wait for me. And then, you know, foreshadowing. Then she's like, I'm going to make this into a folk opera. And then she gets together with this friend named Ben who made puppets. And they make a community production in Vermont, and it's a huge hit. And then she's like, whoa, what do I need to do next? I'm going to make it into a concept album. Then they make a concept album. The concept album's great. Then they go to... off Broadway, then they go to London, then they go to then they're on Broadway, and there's a lot of conflict in between, and it's not that easy, but those are the basic. There's a van tour in there somewhere, and they had a school bus, and that's the story of Hadestown.
44 seconds.
Let's go.
I like that it was 30. I like that there was enough time to talk about Ben Matchstick's like radical puppet theater company, but and then it was just like, and then it went to Edmonton, and then it went into London, and then it went to Broadway.
And then it's just like, here's the timeline. If you want to find out what happened in between, then go and watch the video.
Yes, Hadestown pretty much started as a concept album, and its road from concept album to Broadway was very, very long and very, very winding. And you learned a lot about how they got there, and we had to cut a lot of that information out of the script.
Because Gabby does the script editing, so she was pretty much along. You were along for the whole ride, where the script just kept getting longer and longer, and then
it was so long.
And I mean, it's
the five people who entertain us on Twitter. That's all we talk about.
Oh my god!
It's just
yeah,
how long
it was like. I promise, it's coming. I swear. But you can follow us on Twitter at Wait and Wings. Look at that seamless plug.
Always be plugging.
No, but it was just one of those things where it's like I feel like it's close to being done, but the script just kept going because I had no idea it was a 13-year journey, which is what's nuts about it. Because you'd look at it on Broadway and you think, oh, okay, maybe, what, like 5 years max, maybe? But no, because it goes back to a completely just different time.
Well, and I think knowing the background sort of how Hadestown came to be is just really nice because it's not, by like every metric, it's really not a musical that should succeed on Broadway. And I guess it's impossible to say, you know, which Broadway musical is the best or the most successful, but Hadestown obviously really captivated people in a way that kind of nothing has in a really long time.
Right.
And it's because it had such a long journeyed history and it had so many iterations and they had so many opportunities to fix problems that it really got
right.
there.
To fix problems and just to get that, because that was 13 years where it was a thing. And so that's 13 years that they just kept picking up new people who became super fanatics. But a lot of
right,
it just went back to that concept album. That was the biggest thing for the whole show.
And so what's nice now that the Wait in the Wings YouTube channel has over 30,000 subscribers is that to do research for these videos, you no longer have to just devour the internet. And you got to interview a lot of people who worked on the show to make
right.
this episode happen. Who did you talk to? I don't even remember anymore. It's been so long.
Well, it was the first time using our new like method of trying to actually get people to do interviews too,
mm-hmm.
which I think it was a little bit too successful, where you can get to the point where you have, you know, so much about the show that you're like, I need to tell every single thing. Because everyone I interviewed for this was just so interesting And sadly, everything that's interesting can't stay. But that's why this podcast is here, so we can bring up those stories. But I interviewed Kimberly Maribel, who she understudied for one of the Fates. She was really big for letting me know what it was like on Broadway and getting to the Broadway area. There was Jesse Shelton, who she was one of the original Fates, going all the way back to New York Theater Workshop. And she's mm-hmm. from 36 Questions, which I interviewed her over the phone in a Walmart parking lot.
That's amazing. I'm a big 36 Questions, the podcast musical fan.
Oh, my
so
God.
I'm very yeah. jealous that you got that interview.
I, like, just snuck it in there, too, of, like, can we just talk a little bit about 36 Questions? And I was like, so was this, like, before 36 Questions? And we didn't like dive into 36 Questions, which I wish we had done. But Jesse was a sweetheart. That was a great interview from the Walmart parking lot.
Of course.
Got to interview David Newman, who was the choreographer. That one was a wild one to track down.
Whoa.
Because that one took like 3 weeks to set up, where it was just because, you know, the world is opening back up again, and so people are busy. But he was so sweet because he could have easily just said, hey, screw you, dude. Who are you? I've got more important things.
Who are you? Right, right. But he didn't. Everyone that you interviewed seemed to be really nice
yeah,
and really receptive
yeah,
to it.
Right. And last one was Ben Matchstick, who he was the original director back in Vermont. And he played a big role in teaming up with Aeneas to really come up with that sort of like 1930s factory style aesthetic and just that shoestring budget, that heart that really transferred over to Broadway and that always stayed constant. His was, I think that was one of the first interviews that we did. And that's, like, I always, when I went into this, I thought, oh, okay, Rachel Chafkin, it's Chafkin's project. But really, it's really Aeneas's. Like, just Aeneas. I reached out to Aeneas, and she was really sweet and said, hey, I'm sorry. I'm working on a new album, and I can't do it, but I wish you all the best in the world. That was the same with Andre DeShields.
We almost got Andre DeShields. That was close.
We almost got Ava Noblezada. Like, we got really close, but, you know, you can't get them all. Andre was fucking fantastic with his response. It was like, his cup hath runneth full is what the response said.
Like, sorry, he's super busy.
He has to do King Lear. Come on, whatever.
Get
your priorities straight, Andre.
Come on, Andre. Yeah, you interviewed a lot of people. I feel like your interviews with everyone really stood out. You and I got on a video call and had a meeting right after your meeting with Ben Matchstick, and right. I remember you being blown away after that one in particular because I think it gave a lot of really good insight into where the show started.
Right. And it just, it's mind blowing because it's those things that, this is why I try to get real interviews with people who have actually been involved with the show.
Yeah.
It's because it's going to be so much more beneficial than just hunting down some article on Google. Because it's really great hearing the emotion in their voice as they speak. Because everyone who does a show, if it's great or if it's not, really cares about the show. And there's just something about that that is just really nice to hear.
spoiler alerts for our video. I mean, I guess we kind of already talked about it.
We've given you a warning. Go back. Because I'm entering spoiler territory, unashamedly.
This is a spoiler alert for our YouTube video.
I don't know what you mean. They got the 40-second rundown. Like, they should be caught up on everything that happened with this 13-year journey.
But I think also, like, while talking about Ben Matchstick and sort of where the album started, there was a lot of information in the original script sort of about folk music origins, right? Because that, since it was, you know, this whole thing was really just Aeneas Mitchell's baby. It's been what she's held on to for how many years?
When it went to Broadway, it was like 13 years. So that's like it's a young adult at that point.
Yeah, it's a young adult at that point. But sort of like we talk about in the video, she really wanted to focus on folk music in her life generally because it was a really good way for her to share politically charged messages in a musical format. But you also, there's a whole section of folk music that we cut out of the script. How much of it do you want to dive into?
We can, yeah. Well, I mean, a lot of it was just, it was, because I put it in trying to set up the scene of the 1930s and how that, because that's really when it came to prominence, like became really popular because it was the 1930s. And everybody was suffering in the 1930s. And so it's like, give me this boxcar music because I'm sad and hungry.
Right. Which but, I just, it's funny you say that. I'll go on this tangent always and forever. I think it's super important to discuss the historical context of any kind of art created, right? Because art does not exist in a bubble.
Right.
Folk music was not created in a bubble. And I think it's interesting that the resurgence of folk music that like happened in a time of recession and like the way that Hadestown like exploded again during an economic recession and very wild political climate.
Or like,
it's just
like in the 1960s with civil rights, like the civil rights movement really picking up steam, and Vietnam, it came back there with like Bob Dylan. And
it's nice to look at all of it on paper and to see those connections because art really truly does not exist in a bubble. And I think looking at theater from that perspective also. I mean, if we're talking about Broadway, right, it was after this time that, like, you know, musicals really came to be because people just sort of needed fluff in their lives. But that's a topic for another time.
But let's see. We didn't cut that much out. We just cut out some of the specifics of During this time, 2.5 million people left the Dust Bowl states, a region of land that was decimated by vicious dust storms, and traveled west to hopefully find better lives in California. Sadly, upon reaching the Golden State, these refugees, or Okies as they would come to be known, were met with intense discrimination and forced to subject themselves to backbreaking labor for pitiful wages. And, you know, I really wanted to keep that in, but we didn't really need it.
Right.
Because I wanted to set up that, I wanted to use that image of the Okies and, like, people just being forced to work for literally nothing, but, you know, having that security of being able to eat and having a job.
Yeah. Wait a second. This sounds like someone in the hit musical Hadestown reopening on Broadway in the fall of 2021.
Right. If you got an American Express, you can get your tickets now.
Oh, no. We are not sponsored by American Express. Do not give them the free advertising.
Also brought to you by Manscaped. But, yeah, we had to... We still got the point across, just with fewer words. I think that was the main thing of trying to, with this piece especially, was trying to figure out how to get the point across with fewer words. Because I'm known to ramble.
More matter, less art.
Yes. A new t-shirt.
That's Shakespeare, my dude.
Shake who? No, I will have you, like... If you're just listening to this now, I will have it be known that I do not... God, I hate Shakespeare.
What?
I will have you know that I was walking in Center City, in Philly. I was walking past some museum, and there was a statue that said, "All the world's a stage," with a statue of William Shakespeare. And out loud, I looked at it and went, "Aw, fuck off."
Oh,
then
come
walked
on.
Past it.
This is exactly why we started a podcast. I could speak for 3 hours about what you just said. I do not think that everyone has to like Shakespeare, and I totally understand why people do not like Shakespeare, because the way that it's taught in the world, especially in America, is like done really poorly, because again, plays should be watched, not read. So I think reading plays in English classes is just really stupid. There was a point in the script where I tried to get you 3 times to talk about Shakespeare and you would not do it.
Why does Shakespeare need more exposure? Everyone knows Shakespeare.
Well, I think it wasn't exposure for Shakespeare that I wanted. It was because there's
wanted,
a point
like,
in the video.
You other people.
Yeah, there's a point in the video where you talk about genius hotspots.
It's the sentence, right? That's the sentence right before. That's the leading sentence.
That's the leading sentence right before it. Uh-huh. And so you talk about the different hotspots of, like, you know, genius artists that came to be. And I think that the English Renaissance was a really important one, because William Shakespeare was not the only person creating really good theater. Christopher Marlowe was also there. There's also other people there whose names I don't remember right now.
I mean, I guess you could say Chaucer, but I don't really know if that was... Canterbury Tales wasn't really a play.
No.
It was just a book written in iambic.
Right, but also art was able to exist in that time because of the political climate. But anyways, I think that art inspires art.
Well, next time, bring that up in the note, because I'm pretty sure you had something about mention Shakespeare in the note. And I'm like, I will not.
You should just be able to assume at all times where my brain is going. Ooh.
Oops.
But I think, like, it's really interesting too, sort of looking at where Broadway is right now, sort of in that same regard, right? Because, like, this was Rachel Chavkin's... Was this her first Broadway production?
Second.
Her second. Mm-hmm. Second. This was after Great Comet.
This was after Great Comet, yeah.
Because I'm like, if we look at it in that regard, it's like someone, like a visionary like her, and she's a woman, which is wonderful to actually see a woman directing a musical on Broadway. Who knew?
I never realized, and this was like just, you know, just blind ignorance / what, like male privilege, I guess is what I would call it, where I just like completely neglected that, like, the last, what was the last female director we really talked about on the channel? I want to say it was Tina Landau with SpongeBob. I think that was the last time.
Wasn't that the first video?
That was like the fourth. It was like season one, though. And that's a that's a big fucking problem.
It's hard because the systems aren't there to support them. So it's not like you're avoiding talking about the women directors. It's just that there's less of them because they're not. Yeah.
Well, somebody brought that up. Like, somebody brought that up on the Matilda video. They commented, like, it sucks that, like, you're only talking about male creators. And that's where it really clicked of, like, holy shit, you're right. But then looking at the stats, especially for, like, Hadestown, Anais Mitchell, only the fourth woman in history to win Best Original Score. In like something that's over 70 years, that's nuts.
That's absolutely nuts. Ridiculous. It's especially with, you know, Broadway reopening after being closed for all of this time. And Hadestown is an interesting one as well, right? Because their band just released that statement to have, you know, very specific goals with diversity and inclusion, which I think is really great. And it's like, okay, so Hadestown's band made this announcement, like, who else has actually really done anything else? Everybody marched for this inclusive Broadway and they want this inclusive Broadway, but what's really changing?
Right. And I think that's something that's just, it's going to take time to see if anything changes, which I don't see how it can't, especially just because you're looking at the big hits and what's becoming a huge hit. It's not American Psycho, where it's like three straight jacked white dudes objectifying women. It's not that. It's like, it's the Hamiltons, it's the Come From Aways, it's the ones where, and this is what we touched on in the video, it's the, you can draw in a bigger audience if you have people on stage that reflect the people who are listening to the stuff and who want to be a part of it.
Right. And so if we're sort of looking at those genius hotspots, I think having people like Rachel Chavkin and Anais Mitchell sort of leading this charge on Broadway right now with Hadestown, I am very, very interested to see what comes next, because now that it's been proven with a show like this, that something that's kind of weird can be very, very commercially viable on Broadway. A lot of other artists who normally wouldn't be given the chance to succeed in this medium or in this specific place in the world, hopefully we'll have that chance now.
Right.
I'm hoping that that's a thing. I'm hoping that more people can come to the challenge to try and, you know, be better than Chavkin, to try to, you know, direct better, write better music than Anais Mitchell, like create more interesting staging. I think that is such a wonderful challenge to have moving forward.
Right. And I, so I also talked to Timothy Oliver Reed, who was the dance captain for Broadway. For the Broadway version of Hadestown.
So fun. The dancing in that show is delightful.
What's your favorite dance in it?
My favorite dance is all of the dances. I mean, they have a small ensemble cast, and that whole ensemble cast is able to, like, with their bodies and their bodies alone, like, entirely change the scene of what's happening and who they are, and I think that's amazing.
That's one thing I wish I could have touched on more, was the workers' chorus, just because...
I know, like, there's so many things we wanted to talk about.
T. Oliver Reed just went, like, so in-depth, and it was so cool to hear him talk about it, but he also is the founder of the Black Theater Coalition, too, which that really picked up steam when, you know, COVID hit and there weren't, like, he was able to dedicate more of his time to that. And what I really love about what he's doing over there is they're looking at not just more inclusivity on stage, but also behind the scenes, because that's another place where there's a huge gap. And I need to find it on his website because I remember talking about it. So I learned... When I was getting ready to set up the interview, I went in and I just looked around at the Black Theater Coalition, and Black professionals in the theatrical workforce make up less than 1%.
Oh my God.
Less than 1%.
It's disgusting.
How is it that theater is supposed to be this like place of, like, it's supposed to be the beautiful collaboration? And yet we have bullshit like that happening?
Right. I think the picture, and it's nice so many people are talking about that, so I know we're just two more people throwing our voices into the hat, but I think it's important still. I think theater itself and, like, Broadway really paints themselves as this very inclusive, very, like, happy family, world is good place, but it's not. It's riddled with all of the same systemic issues
still,
that
like
the rest of the world is.
It's still, like, corporations behind it.
Exactly.
Which is a big problem.
Exactly. I think there's a lot that we could talk about in future episodes, sort of about how one actually gets a show on Broadway, because it's a really wild ride.
Right.
And a lot of very specific things need to happen in order for that to happen. And for you to get a lot of those opportunities, you need to be coming from a place of privilege. So it's very right. closed off. It's very challenging.
There was a really good article that I read on Broadway.com that was interviewing female directors on the heels of Hadestown mm-hmm. going to Broadway. They interviewed like Tina Landau. They interviewed, oh my God, what was her name? Kathleen Marshall from Seussical,
mm-hmm.
which she also did other things, but I just remember her mainly from Seussical.
Of course. Brendan Henderson, number one Seussical stan. That's how I should have introduced you. Right?
Yeah, really though, next week. And they interviewed Chafkin. Saying, why do you think it is that, me, a white male, I'm going to tell you why women haven't been getting on Broadway.
Why don't you explain that to me?
Yeah, let me mansplain it.
I would love to know.
But it's important because I'm just going to share what Tina Landau and Rachel Chafkin shared, because it blew my mind that it's so dumb and it's so sexist. Mm-hmm. And I 110% can see that this is the reason. Of the reason that they don't want women directing shows is because of that, like, belief that women don't know how to handle money. Like, handle large budgets.
Oh, which, goodness gracious. I have a lot of feelings and thoughts about that.
I think Landau was the one who said that. And I went, that's nuts, but it doesn't sound too far off, which is depressing.
Yeah, that's super depressing. I mean, obviously I'm dedicating my life much more to theater now, but I've worked in many different industries, all female dominated, and all of my executives and all of my higher management have always been men. Like, all my whole life, that has always been the case.
And it's so stupid, because I mean, think about, like, who has sunk all of these shows on Broadway then?
Right.
Like, if you think about it, if you look at it, the women are winning because they have so much more shelf life. Like SpongeBob, like Lion King with Julie Taymor. Even though I have feelings about Julie Taymor, it is still a bona fide smash. You've got Great Comet, which was a smash. Like, what are we? It's so dumb.
It's so dumb. That's so dumb. That's
women can't
else.
Handle money. Yeah, neither can Andrew Lloyd Webber. Like,
he's gonna come for us. Oh no!
Listen, we really need this giant suspension bridge for my train play.
Listen, it's so the actors they're not gonna know how to rollerblade, but it's gonna be fine. Don't worry about it. It's fine.
Right. No, we cannot use rollerblades. Only skates.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Anyway.
I mean, even looking at it from not a place of Broadway, right? As we're recording this, the In the Heights movie is about to come out, which I'm really excited for, since it seems to be getting good feedback across the board. And I just know, you know, living in San Diego, we have a fairly large community theater scene and people have been doing things online and stuff because of COVID. But by the fall, you know, things are going to be back in action for the most part. And
So
I know every community theater in town pretty soon is going to be doing In the Heights. And I know that, like, as a Latina woman, I'm like, cool, finally I can audition for something where I'm not just like the sexy best friend. I can be any of the characters in this show, which is much more exciting. But I'm also going into that knowing 100% that even in my small, unpaid community theater scene in San Diego, Like, it's all white directors. I've only worked for white directors. I've only seen white directors at auditions. And, like, that's it. So it's, like, even though we're telling these inclusive stories on stage, if they're not being, like, really produced by people of color, it misses a lot of that nuance. So it's an issue. It's a big issue on Broadway, but it's also, like, a really big issue in smaller theater scenes. I would love to hear from people who live in different towns who seem to be doing it right, because here in Southern California, definitely we are not doing it right.
Right.
And so sort of talking about that, there was other stuff that we cut out of the script. The changing tide of Broadway in the early 2000s.
I'm super bummed we had to cut this, because I spent like 2 hours going down a 2000s rabbit hole, which, I mean, it's good that I have the information now for later on. I just watched the CNN documentary, the 2000s. And I just got hooked.
Do you want to, I mean, like, you could narrate it and we could put some music behind it, or we could just read through it. I'm like, we could have an exclusive deleted scene, or we could just, like, kind of work through it.
No, but the Changing Tide of Broadway one was just setting the scene, which I think we'll explore more in our next episode.
Mm-hmm.
Especially since it's going back to that time. But it was talking about, do we want to do a deleted scene? We'll do music underneath it.
Sure.
Okay, here we go. Deleted scene. On Broadway during this time, the remnants of the 1980s mega musical could still be felt, with the slick and flashy jukebox musical Jersey Boys leading the charge at the 60th annual Tony Awards. Not to mention, many of the shows from the 80s were still running strong, with Phantom of the Opera becoming the longest-running Broadway musical ever, beating out Cats. But underneath, Broadway in America as a whole was reaching a conflicting impasse. After the terror attacks of 9/11, New York and America was left vulnerable and filled with anxiety. The innocence of the 80s and 90s had been stripped away, and as a result, the music scene started to change. The rock bands of Brooklyn that had been bubbling under the surface started to come to prominence, with bands like The Strokes, TV on the Radio, and Karen O helping to make counterculture and indie rock become less of a genre and more of a scene. A scene based in looking forward with optimism, but not in a way that denied the reality and loss of innocence that came with the times. By the early to mid-2000s, this style started to rear its head on Broadway, with shows becoming less focused on flashy special effects and more on raw stories presented in an authentic, stripped-back way. Why can't I nail it like that when I'm actually recording the audio?
I don't know. Maybe it's
when I'm actually recording.
There's added pressure.
When I'm actually recording it, it would have been like, on Broadway through the time. Fuck!
That was a good... Well, it's hard when you get in your own head and you're just recording something because you're like, I suck.
Right. I would love to just save the stuff that I cut out, because it's always like
it's nonsense.
It would be like, but underneath Broadway and because I remember I saw this interview with what's his name, Aaron Eckhart. He played Harvey Dent in The Dark Knight.
Uh-huh. Oh God.
And I remember he did this interview on Regis and Kelly, and they were saying, like, how does it seem like you get your shots done? Like, always right the first time. And he says, it's because when I mess up, I'll just drop a vulgarity, so then they have to cut it out. So he'd be like, the dawn is always fucking shit, and then, like, go back and they'd have to cut it out.
I love
so
that.
Anytime that happens, I always just think of Aaron Eckhart just cussing to get him to stop, because it's right, you can't use the shot if you just drop an f-bomb.
No. Nope.
Or he would just do it completely straight of, like, it's always dark as fuck before the dawn, damn it. Just like that.
I love that. I'm happy for him. I'm super happy for him.
But yeah, Broadway was changing in the early 2000s, and a lot of it just came back to America really changed as a whole after 2001, like, you know, understandably.
Understandably, it super did. And I think there's a lot of that we'll be talking about. Sort of the exciting thing about what we're doing for season 3, I'm really happy because you had sort of an idea for what you wanted to do with season 3, and then I said I really wanted to make the argument for the Broadway Renaissance that I think was happening before COVID hit. And there, we'll find out what happens, you know, as Broadway reopens. Which, like the English Renaissance that was also cut off by the plague, I'm just, there's interesting parallels there, all right?
They didn't have TikTok.
Oh, you're right, then, but they didn't have TikTok. But the extended argument sort of that we're making for this season is that there was a very, very strong Broadway Renaissance, because I think without a doubt there was, particularly when looking at musical theater. And there's a certain amount of episodes that we're covering on the channel and in the Wait in the Wings podcast. But for all the shows that we do not have time to cover, we will be talking about here on Ye Podcast. So I think it's interesting. We were just talking about the early 2000s and like things kind of being stripped back, because I immediately was like, oh, Legally Blonde, which was like definitely not stripped back. but for me, at least, was a really big, I think that's like, it's an interesting point if we're looking at how Broadway got to where it is, because it was, you know, streamed on MTV.
Right.
There was a rebirth of theater because it rebirthed with technology. And I think that's like a really important thing to look at.
Right. And that kind of gets touched on in Beetlejuice, too. The Beetlejuice video of how TikTok is what literally saved that show.
Yeah. I mean, if you're interested, I would love to talk about Beetlejuice again from a different perspective, obviously, not just covering the history of it, because I think the fan response to Beetlejuice was a really, really big deal. And it's just, oh, it's so sad that it's not coming back.
It was just like, yeah, I keep waiting for them to announce that it's just moved to a different theater, because I'm closer now and I just want to go and just rock out to Dead Mom.
Mm-hmm.
My top Spotify playlist song of 2019.
I can't hear Dead Mom without thinking about you, which sucks.
I'm so sorry you have to go through that.
It's really challenging. So yeah, there's other shows that I want to talk about. I mean, there's Beetlejuice. There's Heathers, which I think is interesting, because if it wasn't for bootlegs, Heathers wouldn't have become what it was. And I think, like, me during COVID, I've always been very anti-bootleg, but with the times changing, I've gotten a much more nuanced opinion on it. We have a lot of things that we would like to discuss about accessibility in theater and what that really means.
Right. I'll just say it now. Only way you get rid of bootlegs is by getting it out there. Get your
I
show out there.
Would have paid so much money to watch pro shots of any of the shows that I watched bootlegs of.
Right.
I'm like, I was not making a lot of money during COVID, but I would happily throw that money towards truly enjoying something and supporting artists. I just,
which that'll be an episode down the road.
I just like off on the Ratatouille before we go off did on this. So well, I just have so many feelings.
Do you remember during the prom when I like drunk texted Kevin Chamberlain?
Oh yes,
and said, we had a great job on Ratatouille and in the prom. Like.
Brendan has Kevin Chamberlain's phone number, and he should really delete it from his phone.
And then Kevin just writes back, thanks. Who is this?
Who is this? Why are you texting me at midnight?
And then he sent me a really sweet email saying, hey, come check me out on, I'd love for you to watch Stars in the House. And it was great.
So great. Thanks, Kevin Chamberlain.
Best friends with Kevin Chamberlain.
You heard it here first. Close personal friends with Kevin Chamberlain. So anyways, speaking of Kevin Chamberlain, Hadestown had a real narrative problem with Orpheus.
That was a very large jump, but I think it was pretty seamless, and that is absolutely staying in. Why, yes, Gabby, it did have a narrative problem.
Our boy, our favorite sad boy, John Mayer type, Orpheus, had a lot of narrative issues, which I think is really funny. Let's talk about
it. Well, I think it totally makes sense.
Well, it does. And it's like, if you look at it.
There's just, we'll keep going.
It's like, who is this guy who's like, I'm going to change the world. La, 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 la. It's like, shut up, dude. Like.
His first line His first line is, the man who's gonna marry you. And it's like, I hate you.
I love Orpheus. I'm a simp for Orpheus. Sorry, right. Is this the point in the podcast where we talk about how two people going through independent breakups had to talk about Hadestown for 2.5 months? Because that was an experience. Yeah, fun. Super fun. Really fun. Really fun time. That was super emotionally not draining at all.
I remember Gabby texting me when I was walking through a Walmart. About, like, because she had just watched it, and she was like, it's just so nice and so lovely. And I just remembered saying, just remember, this is a made-up story. These characters do not exist.
I think, but here's the thing.
Here's a fantasy.
Here's the thing about it. Like, Orpheus and Eurydice, it's like a Disney movie, right? They see each other and they fall in love. It's not that big of a deal. The reason you believe it isn't because of the story. The reason you believe it is because the music is, like, so right. emotional. And I think the acting between the two of them was just so delightful that it's, like, you don't need the drawn-out plot of, like, why they're in love and how they fell in love. It's just you see them and, like,
right.
deeply, truly, I'm just, like, I hear it in their voices and I see it in their bodies. Like, these are two right. people who love one another. And, like, that's the part that's heartbreaking. So I know they're fictional characters, but the love felt so real.
Real. It's something you can connect to, and I totally get that.
And, like, it's thanks, Aeneas, for that folk music. Well done. You really made the origins of everything, I think, really made the emotional beats stand out.
Right. But that was something that... There was something that they really had to work on with them too, because that was with New York Theater Workshop. That was the biggest problem, was we don't know why these two love each other.
Mm-hmm.
And they could have gone off on this whole, like, just the entire first act is dedicated to them meeting or something like that. But when,
oh God, can you imagine?
Oh my God. It's just Andre de Shields.
That would have sucked.
God, it would have been horrible. 3-act play. But that, everyone would always ask Aeneas in workshops, why do they love each other? And she said, it's because they say each other's names. Like, I don't get what the problem is. It's because she's Eurydice and he's Orpheus. And they're like, that doesn't work.
Of course they love each other. It just works. Right. They're just...
It's because he's Orpheus, she's Eurydice.
There we go.
But they fixed it by... They fixed it by adding in that line of about them, like, it was written in the stars and that they were destined to be together, which just one line. Okay, I believe it. It's like, set those rules for what your universe is.
Exactly.
And I'll believe it.
Exactly. Like, that those are the rules of the universe. And, like, because everything else made it so convincing, like, I didn't question it. I'm like, oh, they love each other.
Right.
It's cool. I'm here for it. I'm happy for them.
Right.
Well, it's also that, like, you. Orpheus was kind of, like, arrogant before, right? Whereas now he is sort of, like, soft.
It was like he was a total dick.
Yeah.
it was the rigors of theatrical storytelling that Aeneas had to go through, because when you're listening to it as music, you're willing to zone out and let the narrative take over. Like, you're not really that concerned with the story because you're like, oh, this sounds nice.
Yeah.
But as soon as you actually have to tell us, like, be around this character for more than, like, 3 minutes, then it becomes tricky.
No, I think it's interesting, too, because before Reeve Carney was Orpheus, it was, what's his name, Damon Duano? Am I pronouncing that
Damon
right?
Damon Dono.
Damon Dono, who was really Orpheus for most of its, like, big workshops. And I think it's really funny that after Hadestown, he went to go be Curly in Oklahoma, because it's like, I can see how that dickish energy that was maybe in Orpheus, like, really lended itself well to Oklahoma, but why that, like, ultimately was taken out of Hadestown.
And it's funny because I looked up images of Damon Dono in Hadestown, and I was like, these are just photos of Oklahoma.
That's so
they
funny.
Weren't. It was.
That is so funny.
It's like, why is it just all Oklahoma photos?
Oklahoma's not reopening, is it? No, that show had closed.
No. Yeah.
I'm like, that's what I wouldn't mind seeing. With you.
Oh, yeah.
I would go to, that I would travel to Philly to go
I would just be so
watch
curious
that.
To see how dark it is. And, it, like, no one can do a bootleg. There's one bootleg, but they're holding on to it. They're not selling it for cheap. Because they kept the thing lit the whole time. Because it's like, you're in Oklahoma. The sun's always shining here. Har, har, har.
It's a choice. Like, they made a made a stylistic choice with their theater, which I respect, because Hades Town did the same thing, right? It's theater, not really in the round, but it's close. For Broadway, that's as close as they'll get to theater in the round.
But it's a good point about, like, that energy did transfer over. And it's like we talked about in the video, where he literally thinks he can change the world with a song. How isn't it's that fine line of, like, cocky and confident that everybody tries to walk.
Right.
Because it's like, it's, yeah. So how wasn't he going to be a dick? Like,
right. But I mean, like, they faced right. it really well. And I think the way that they chose to end Hadestown is also really nice. We talk a lot about the turn, so I don't want to get into that. But I think the fact that the story ends in a really
bring it up. It's the spoiler talk.
No, I mean, I think we have nothing more to say than what we've already said on the turn. Right. I think what's more interesting is that after the heartbreaking moment of the turn, the story just restarts. I think it's really beautiful that it's a cyclical story.
Right.
Because, you know, like, the stage has lots of cyclical things on it. And obviously this is a story that
So many circles.
What did your theater education give you?
Hadestown has pretty circles.
There are a lot of circles on the stage.
It's like poetry. It rhymes.
It's crazy. It's crazy.
I loved diving into them staging the turn, because when I was interviewing David, I got that from David Newman, the choreographer.
Oh,
and he just
cool.
like glanced over it. He's like, yeah, that's how we fixed the turn. But when we got to Broadway, I was like, wait. Tell me more about the turn. And then that went on like a 15-minute tangent. And I was I've got it saved because I have it for my notes. I want to talk to him about if I could share that with somebody, because it is just so powerful how he describes it. And it's really, like, what you get in the video is just scraping the surface of what their psychology was going into it.
Mm-hmm.
It was so interesting to hear him talk about everything that was going on.
Well, that's another thing, because I like to think about the future of these shows when they're done with Broadway. Hadestown will hopefully have a long, successful history on, or career on Broadway. But it's like, when I think about how will, like, regional theaters stage this, you know, 5 years from now, 10 years from now, when they have the rights, I'm, like, so curious. I would love to see the show and how it's done and how different people choose to interpret it, because that's, like, such a pivotal moment. And the way they did it was perfect, but, yeah.
Well, yeah, having it be out of everybody's control, where she just sinks into the ground, it just fucking hurts even more.
It's amazing, but most theaters do not have that elaborate of a trapdoor system. So.
I mean, it could probably be... could be really dangerous, but you could do a trap door. Open up the trap door, you have two people down there, and they're just holding up the feet, and then they slowly lower her down. And then one night, somebody gets sore armed, and then she drops, and then Jess and Andrew from Musicals with Cheese have a new theater fail.
There you go. I thought it would be, like, interesting staging if, like, the, like, workers ensemble came and just stole her away. I thought that would be a really interesting staging piece as well. If you need her to not have any agency over the situation, that could be interesting.
Even if you need to, just, like, turn the light off slowly. I mean, I guess that would work. Have a creepy crawly come out. Hunky organic farmer.
Hunky
Noah
organic
Han
farmer
just creeps out.
Noah Han. Anais Mitchell's husband, who was referred to as hunky organic farmer in the script, and then Brendan.
And musician.
Brendan cut that without telling me, and I'm really bummed about it, but it's...
How would it have fit when it's, like, this beautiful violin music underneath it, and we're about to talk about how she's so alone, and it's, like, a serious moment, and then it's just, she was ready to get back to the Langdon Street Cafe. And it's hunky organic,
hunky
farmer, vegetable
organic
farmer.
Musician farmer Noah Han.
A musician farmer. He farms musicians.
He farms musicians.
This is Blade Runner.
Is that not what a producer's job is? Boom roast.
Hey.
But I think it's important as well. Like, the cyclical ending of it was really beautiful, but it also made it digestible for the audience. Like, I can definitely imagine that there were, you might know actually if there were versions of Hadestown that just ended after the turn.
Yeah, it was, I remember reading about Anais and Rachel both talked about how they wanted to end this thing. especially just tapping into that human emotion of like, yeah, life is really depressing, and yet we still keep going, thinking it's going to be different. Like, there's still this optimism to it. And so Chafkin decided to just run with it, and she went, Aeneas wrote this in her book, she went full Groundhog Day.
Oh, God. And that's just like
reset everything.
Oh, my God. It's
Andy
all
Carl
connected.
Came out.
Andy Carl came out. Was like, hey, guys, he like, Phil Connors.
Who needs
back
enemas with friends like these?
This section of the podcast is dedicated to Mark at Broadway by Ghost. that is so funny that
I loved that. That was just a cross. There were so many unintentional crossovers learning about this with the double take that I loved.
That's really, really funny. So it's like I can see why they ended it Groundhog Day style, starting again from the beginning.
And then the entire audience had to stay. And like the opening night crowd is still there just because they keep doing the show over and over.
Rumor has it, it never stops. They're still there now.
This was a steal.
If you sing la 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 into the mirror at night 3 times.
Reeve Carney shows up.
Reeve Carney in a top hat shows up in your bathroom.
Listening to Taylor Swift's I Knew You Were Trouble.
Honestly, I would pay money for that experience.
Have you watched the Taylor Swift I Knew You Were Trouble music video?
No, is he in it?
It's Reeve Carney.
Oh my God.
Because I was looking up his IMDb and I was like,
oh my God.
I was like, wait. And so you watch it and he just gets beat up. And it was like, this version of Hadestown is weird.
I had to watch a TED Talk with Julie Taymor for school. And then I was just doing things and then it showed a clip from that Tempest movie, which is a vibe.
We had to watch that in my class too.
And then I was like, oh my God, Reeve Carney is in this Tempest movie. Like, I can't escape him. He's just following
me
around.
Bono shows up and it's just no.
Oh man.
But speaking of Reeve Carney, actually, I can't tell you who this came from that I interviewed, but I had to ask the question of, did they make any jokes like to Reeve Carney and Patrick Page about them being in Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark?
And
they said yes. they responded with, oh, all the time. they were staging one of the first numbers with Reeve. And they said, all right, Reeve, so here's how you're going to make your entrance. You're going to come out, you're going to jump, and you're going to do this. And then they did a Spider-Man pose. And then Reeve got triggered and was like, oh, no.
Oh, no, I'm never going to be able to escape it.
Well, I mean, it had to be a traumatic experience. And the thing is, I can only imagine what a different experience Hadestown was compared to Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark. Because I think Hadestown had like 30 previews compared to Spider-Man's like 85 or whatever it was.
So many.
Like, yeah. I remember Patrick Page always had to go up to Reeve Carney and say, I just want you to know this isn't normal.
Like, this is not how it is, dude. It really is. I think I was in New York in 2013. And I had the chance to see either Spider-Man or Mamma Mia, and I saw Mamma Mia because I was like, I'm not watching that awful Spider-Man musical, and I really regret it.
I remember walked by it, and I was on a debate trip, and I was like, I really want to see this. Just
I
because
was like,
I remember Entertainment
absolutely
Tonight was...
not. No, thank you.
Knowing my luck, I would have gone when everything went right. Mm-hmm. Like a bummer.
Would have been more fun if that wasn't the case. But I think it's important, too, that it ended on a happy ending, because sort of what we talk about in the video is that, you know, Hadestown also needed to be commercially viable. It could have been this very beautiful, like, artsy piece that didn't make it on Broadway. But for it to be on Broadway, it needed to be more commercially viable. So I think, sort of as we talk about other things as well, that will become more interesting. I'm a big fan of Spring Awakening, as you know.
Oh, I love Spring Awakening.
And Spring Awakening has that same, like, it reminded me of that in that regard, because Spring Awakening, the play, is more depressing than the musical by a long shot, and it ends and a lot sadder than the musical does. And, like, I would say that the musical ends in a sad way, but they made it happier because it needed to be commercially viable. So I think
Right.
It's another interesting angle to explore, that the lines that these like Broadway shows kind of have to teeter around between, like, we want to make an important impact, but also, like, it can't be a super bummer because it does need to be produced for people to,
like, I need to be willing to go back. I need to be willing to go back and watch it again.
And watch it and watch it again. Right. And like, kind of like I was saying with Hadestown earlier, like, Spring Awakening is one of my favorite shows to see. Like, I don't like any, if there's any size theater, like, within driving distance of me doing Spring Awakening, I'm like, oh, I want to go see it. Cause I just like to know how people, how different directors and different actors and different designers stage a show that everybody has seen before. So I'm very excited about the future of Hadestown to see where it goes. All right, my friend, we could do this forever, and we have, and we will continue to, but we'll cut off this episode now. I'm super duper interested to hear if other people have guesses for what we're going to cover in season 3 of Wait in the Wings. Also, if there's other shows that you would label under the Broadway Renaissance that you would like to hear us talk about, we would love to hear it. We're on Twitter at Too Much Expo. That's the number 2, Too Much Expo.
Because we're edgy.
Because we're edgy. It's totally not because everything else on Twitter was taken. Brendan, where can the people find you on the internet?
Yeah, you can also follow the main channel at Wait Wings on Twitter. And if you haven't yet, if you just found yourself here and you're like, oh, okay, this sounds like it actually might be up my alley, then come on over to Wait in the Wings on YouTube. We make new documentaries once a month, and we'll cover all the behind the scenes stuff that we didn't talk about here.
You can find me at Gabriella Dazed. It's a play on word. It's Gabriella with one L and Dazed with a Z. Do you get it? He's just looking at me. He's like, it's not that funny. Move on, lady. But until next time.
Until next time, remember to live truthfully in those imaginary circumstances, and Chester sends his love.
We are not ending the podcast that way.
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org. Because only together we rise.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from, with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.